We're continuing in the 11th chapter of 1 Samuel and ready to begin at the 5th verse. And the setting for this portion of the scripture is that Saul has just been anointed king, although we have not learned of any official duty that he's done as king yet. And there comes a time now when the Ammonites are threatening a city over in the tribe of Gad named Jabesh-Gilead. And these Ammonites have told the people of Jabesh-Gilead that they're going to subdue them. They want them to willingly volunteer to give up to them so that they can make them servants. They're going to put out the right eye of each person. Well, the people of Jabesh-Gilead have appealed to Saul for help. They sent a message to the city of Gibeah telling what their plight was. And so our story continues now with Saul learning about the condition of the city in Jabesh-Gilead. So verse 5 of 1 Samuel 11, "And behold, Saul came after the herd out of the field." So we learn a little bit about the characteristic of Saul now. Although he was king, he had been anointed to this high place, he didn't feel himself too good or too high to still go out into the field and take care of the herd. And it's also an indication probably that the office of king had not yet acquired the duties and the responsibilities that would take up all of Saul's time. So he spent his time looking after his herd. But as he came out of the field, and Saul said, "What aileth the people that they weep?" Now, the people of Gibeah were weeping when they heard the threat that was happening to Jabesh-Gilead. And so Saul, when he saw this, he asked the question, "Why are the people weeping?" And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. So they told him what the situation was. There's a threat to this city by the Ammonites, the city over in Gad. And we can see then that this would cause a lot of concern to Saul. One of the reasons that he was put in the office of king was because the people feared the Ammonites. And here was the first great national crisis now that had come up that he would have an opportunity to be responsible for and that he could take some kind of action against. Another thing we'd like to note is that this city of Jabesh-Gilead had a very special link to the tribe of Benjamin, because back when they had the Civil War due to the sin of the men of Gibeah, and the rest of Israel subdued the tribe of Benjamin and slew everyone except 600 men. When they were looking for wives for these 600 men, because Jabesh-Gilead had not participated in the war, they punished that city and killed everybody there except 400 of the maidens. And so they took these 400 maidens from Jabesh-Gilead and let them be the wives of 400 of those 600 men of Benjamin. So two-thirds of all the major families in Benjamin had mother to come from this city of Jabesh-Gilead. So there were some close ties between Benjamin and this city of Jabesh-Gilead. And it's quite possible that even Saul may have had as his grandmother or great-grandmother a person who had come from this very city. So there were some close ties there, and this, if nothing else, would stimulate great interest upon his part to bring about some kind of help for this city due to its great plight. But even if that tie had not been with Benjamin, Saul still would have had a great interest in the protection of the country by protecting this one city, because when this city fell, that means then that there were other cities that would continue to fall. Somewhere or another, this invasion of the Ammonites would have to be stopped. So verse 6 says, "And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard those tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly." Now he was angry. He was angry at the threat that the Ammonites made. He was angry at the punishment that was impending upon these people of Jabesh-Gilead. They were going to have their right eye put out and made slaves of these Ammonites. And there could be some other things he was angry at also, but it was a righteous indignation. It was an anger that was guided by the Spirit of God and one that was justified. And he took a yoke of oxen, and hewed them in pieces, and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, Whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen. So he doesn't threaten with a real terrible threat to anyone who doesn't participate in the battle, but he does threaten that if you do not come, your oxen are going to be killed. Now the law did provide for this in Deuteronomy 28:31. The statement is made that the oxen shall be killed before your eyes, and you shall not be able to eat thereof. So this is a threat according to law, and it's a threat that's not so terrible that no one could stand to have this punishment inflicted upon them, but yet it was enough to get the message across. And he says not only to come not forth after Saul, but also after Saul and after Samuel, showing here that he intended for Samuel to be involved in this in his capacity of judge and priest, intended to go in this battle with the full sanction of God, and it was not just something he was going to do on his own without any guidance from God, even though he does have at this time the Spirit of God to come upon him. He is acting under the influence of God, but he includes Samuel in this. And so verse 7 further says, And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. So he had a very great effect upon the rest of the nation. The fear of the Lord came upon them. That is, they respected God. They respected this as the decision of God. They respected the fact that they were now a nation that was under threat by a foreign power. And so they were coming then to defend that. And he says, with one consent. That is, everybody had the same mind about it. Everybody was agreed that this is what needs to be done. And so the nation now was behind this action of Saul in protecting this city of Jabesh-Gilead. Verse 8, And when he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. Now, this city of Bezek, to the best of my knowledge, is located possibly in the tribe of Manasseh. It's on the way from Shechem up to Bethshean, which was on the route that they would take then to cross the Jordan River to get over into the land of Gad to fight against the Ammonites. And we notice the number given of the army. The children of Israel had 300,000 and the men of Judah 30,000, which means that Judah, although they were a very powerful tribe, and at one time they were the most powerful tribe of the whole nation, now we see that they're only 1/11th of the total number, so they really are not contributing that much more than the other average tribe would to this army. And so this gives us some insight as to how low and how weak this tribe was prior to the time of David taking over the reign of kingship. Verse 9, And they said unto the messengers that came, Thus shall you say unto the men of Jabesh-Gilead, Tomorrow, by that time the sun be hot, ye shall have help. So the same messengers came and told them of the sad plight of Jabesh-Gilead. These same messengers were sent back to that city, and they were told that by tomorrow, by the time the sun comes up and is hot, you're going to have help. So this is very swift action. The men had 7 days to get some help, and as soon as Saul learns about this, he gathers an army just seemingly overnight and tells them that by the next day you're going to have help. So it's a pleasant message that is coming back to Jabesh. They're going to have help now. The king has promised it. The whole nation is rallying behind them, and so they have reason to have hope. And of course, we know that this is the way it should always be with God's people. Anytime one person or one group of persons in the kingdom of God are threatened, then the rest of God's people should rally around them, give them whatever aid and support they can, and show them that they do have their love and their support and their help. The very least member has a right to expect help from the other members in time of distress. So this is swift action on the part of Saul. And the messengers came and showed it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. So we can see why they were glad, because now help was on the way, substantial help. And we're seeing now that this office of king that Saul occupies is truly being put to the test, truly being put into good use here for the benefit of the people of the nation. Verse 10, "Therefore the men of Jabesh said, Tomorrow we will come out unto you, and you shall do with us all that seemeth good unto you." So it seems that now they sent a message to the Ammonites, telling them that tomorrow we're going to come out unto you. Now they're not saying anything about help coming. They're not obligated to say that they have an army coming to give them assistance, but they're just letting the men of the Ammonites know that tomorrow this thing will be resolved. And no doubt this caused the Ammonites to kind of relax and think, well, we've got this thing made now. They're going to give up to us because there's no help on the way. There's no way that these people can effectively counter our attack, our power that we have. So we'll just sit back and relax and let the thing resolve itself tomorrow. Verse 11, "And it was so on the morrow that Saul put the people in three companies." So here's a man that has had no military experience that we know of. He was raised on the farm. But now that he has this army of people assembled, that he puts the people in three companies, he divides them up into three groups. "And they came into the midst of the host in the morning watch and slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day." So he says that they're going to be there by the time the sun gets hot, but they come in the midst of the host in the morning watch. They come while it's still early. He's even beaten the timetable that he'd set for himself. "And they slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day." They were already in battle by the time the heat of the day came, and they just about had the thing won. And we can see with what vigorous and actually incredible speed and diligence Saul exercised here. He got right into the midst of this battle. He charged the Ammonites, and he slew them under the heat of the day. And it came to pass that they which remained were scattered, so that two of them were not left together. There was no way that this army could band together. There's no way that it could regroup and come back and fight against Saul, because they were so scattered that no two of them were left together. So Saul, who had 330,000 men, divided into three battalions, had defeated the nation of the Ammonites. He'd put down the great threat that was now hanging over his nation. He'd saved this city of Jabesh-Gilead. And as we mentioned before, had this city fallen, that would have just simply meant that there would have been a threat to the next city and the next city until finally the Ammonites were conquered, or until the Israelites were all subdued under the hand of the Ammonites. So it seems that Saul now has rallied to the call. He has certainly exercised his power in a judicious and swift manner, and this matter of the threat by the Ammonites is brought to a swift and satisfactory conclusion. Now, as a result of this victory, the people truly begin to accept and to recognize Saul as the king. They feel that he is truly qualified for the office. Verse 12, "And the people said unto Samuel, Who is he that said, Shall Saul reign over us? Bring them in, that we may put them to death." Now we saw earlier that there was a dissenting group of people, those that were counted as the children of Belial. They were saying that they didn't want Saul to be king. They didn't want to recognize him as king. And so now the people, after Saul's great victory over the Ammonites, the people are saying, "Bring those men that we may put them to death. Let's just get rid of all dissenting elements. This nation is going to have to unite behind this king. Anyone who says anything against the king is going to be put to death. And those that have already spoken against Saul do not have the right to live." But notice how Saul steps in verse 13. "And Saul said, There shall not a man be put to death this day." So this was not a time to get revenge. This was not a time to bring about some more suffering in the land. Saul says, "There should not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel." Now is a time for unity. Now is a time for the nation to join together and stop internal fighting and internal bickering. We've had to unite together for a common cause against these Ammonites. And so salvation has been brought in Israel. That's the will of God for Israel today, and so nobody's going to be put to death. There's not going to be any cause for further grief among the people of God. So we see then that this great victory over the Ammonites not only protected Israel against a foreign invader, but it also solidified things at home. It improved the home situation. Now the nation was solidly behind Saul as king. Now the nation was wanting to avenge any who had spoken against Saul. And so this then would bring the government into the central focus of the land, and it would allow the government to be respected by all men. Verse 14, "Then said Samuel to the people, Come, let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." Now Samuel probably did not participate in the battle with the Ammonites, but he did keep a very close connection with what was happening. He was still considered to be the spiritual leader at this point. He was the spiritual leader. And Gilgal was one of those three places that he went in his circuit to perform as priest and judge. Gilgal was also the city that was the closest to the area of the battle by the Jordan River. So he says, "Let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." Now we'd like to note that Saul had already been anointed once by Samuel, although this was a very private thing, and it was something that probably most of the people were not all that aware of. They did not have an opportunity to participate in it or to witness it. So now there was going to be a public anointing of Saul. And this was going to be in such a way that everyone could freely see and know that this man was now declared in a public way to be the king. He had proven himself in battle. He had proven himself as a leader. The people were of such a frame of mind that they wanted to accept him. And so this was the time, this was the appropriate time to truly make a public show of this. And so Samuel takes advantage of it. He says, "Let's go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." And all the people went to Gilgal. So this must have been quite a convocation of the people, a very mass assembly here for the writer to describe this as all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. So this was the formal, official, public making of Saul king. There was no question now in the minds of anyone as to who the king was, as to when he became king, as to the fact that he was officially designated now as the king. And so, not only did they anoint Saul and formally appoint him to this office of kingship, but they also, furthermore, and there they sacrificed sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord. So they worshiped God. They gave God thanks for the things that had happened unto them. They appreciated the fact that they had just had this victory. They appreciated the fact that the state of the nation was in as good a condition as it was, and that they now had this man to be their king. Their desire for a king had been answered, and they felt good about the fact that Saul was the man who now occupied that throne. So they sacrificed to God, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So there was great rejoicing in this occasion. Now things were looking up to the people. This was what they wanted, and they had gotten it. And their first encounter with the enemy had been a very successful one, and so things were looking real good for the nation at this particular point. Saul is arriving at his very pinnacle of success, acceptance by the nation, victory and success in his first venture against the enemy, the Ammonites. And so everything is very favorable, and the prognosis for his kingship looks good at this point. So that concludes the 11th chapter of 1 Samuel. And as we move into the 12th chapter, we see that this is just a continuation of the occasion where the people had come together at Gilgal.